Do sit down. I was thinking about the 12 days of Christmas, about that song, that carol that we sang. What's it all about? And so, of course, I went on the internet, which is the source of all wisdom and all truth, and all rubbish as well. Just to prove that last point, I went on this afternoon, and this is very simple, just type in average present spending UK 2007. The first two items that come up say this. First site says, Christmas spending on presents is set to halve in 2007 to £154. The second entry on the internet says, Christmas 2007 is to see a massive rise in the average spend on presents. Total contradiction. So anyway, what is the 12 days of Christmas all about? What is this song going on about? Well, there on the internet, you will find the answer. It says that when Roman Catholics were not allowed to practice their religion publicly, and if you're listening to news this morning or reading the paper this morning, you know that now Catholics have overtaken Anglicans in the attendance tables. But in the days when Catholics were not allowed to practice their religion openly, they developed this secret catechism. That's a sort of method of instructing the faithful. And so the partridge, the number one, represents the love of God. The number two represents the Old Testament and the New Testament. The number three represents faith, hope, and love. Number four, the number of the Gospels, and so on. And the sad thing is that people believe this. Why not? I hear you cry. Well, I didn't, but I'll pretend I did. Well, if you think about it, well, the first reason is that if you look on one website, it says the number one, the partridge in the pear tree, represents the love of God. And on another one you look up, it says it represents Jesus. Though how you get Jesus in a pear tree, it's beyond me. But as soon as you notice a discrepancy, you start to worry. But think about this. What on earth would the Catholics have had to hide in teaching their converts that there is one God, or one Jesus Christ, that there's an Old Testament and a New Testament, that the three Christian virtues are faith, hope, and charity, that the four Gospels are all there are? There's nothing Catholic about it. It's absolutely straightforward Protestant teaching. Too much mulled wine. And there's no need at all for them to hide that whatsoever. Plus the fact, of course, that for the Roman Catholics, in their Bible, you've got the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Apocrypha. So actually, that should be three, not two. So anyway, we'll dismiss that as a theory. I'm afraid someone's just made it up to make it sound rather good and Christianize the song, which is frankly a kind of Conrad Black song. Those of you who know Conrad Black, recently sent to Chokey for extravagantly wild parties. And just the kind of thing that his wife Barbara Amiel would have liked would be sending a present on the first day, another present on the second day, more on the third, more on the fourth, until she has on the 12th day a great big blowout. Because I suspect, and I didn't find this on a website, I've made it up, but I suspect that that's what this is all about. A massive feast. Because think about these birds. Apparently the song comes from the French. Now, are there any French people here tonight? Est-ce qu'il y a des Français ici ce soir? Are we allowed tongues in this church, or do we have to have an interpretation? It's a shame, because that explains something else, but I'll come back to it in a moment. But it comes from the French, and we know that the French shoot anything that flies, like little larks, sweet little larks. We write poems about them singing in the air. The French, pow, pow, eat them. So it doesn't quite work, but I was thinking, you have a swan, that's the biggest one, and into the swan you stuff it with a goose, that's the next one down. And then, apparently, according to a birding site, number five, the rings could represent pheasants, golden pheasants, which are ringed birds. And then calling birds comes from collie birds, which is blackbirds. So you have a blackbird inside a, you know, inside a. You can do that, can't you? But then it breaks down. Because I don't think you can fit a partridge inside a hen, inside a turtle dove, inside a blackbird. So it was a good theory until then. But here's the other bit that explains, what is the partridge doing in a pear tree? Now, it's such a shame that we haven't got any French people here. Because a partridge in French is un perdri. So, actually, you know, it's the same thing twice over. Un partridge, un perdrix. It's a mix-up. Somebody's mistranslated it. And it's very unlikely that the partridge was ever in a pear tree. So I think it's a massive feast that he is giving her. And that's what she's going to enjoy. Probably not eating the drummer's drumming and the piper's piping, but the rest. A blowout. And it started me thinking about the young people today. Because if you said, I mean, and frankly the older people, but if you said to your swain, to your lover, to your boyfriend or girlfriend, I've got you the most fantastic present, and then you reeled off this list of birds, they wouldn't be very impressed, would they? So I went on Amazon, I did my research for you, everything on the internet, and I found this. On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love sent to me 12 Doctor Who torches, 11 Barbie Island princesses, 10 Flytech dragonflies, 9 Transformers, 8 model helicopters, 7 Mr. Potato Heads, 6 Top Gear Top Trumps, 5 Caltech video journals, 4 Bobbit Extreme, 3 Scenic Games, 2 Chef Remy's, and a radio-controlled helicopter. That is what they really want, according to the top 12 Amazon favorite toys. And it reminds me of that age-old struggle between buying the children what we think they ought to want and buying them what they want. Looking at dads over there, you know, I don't know if it's a conflict this Christmas. But there's a lovely cartoon series, lovely actually isn't the word, a very enjoyable cartoon series called Calvin and Hobbes. A little boy called Calvin is stuffed tiger. And Calvin is talking to his mum, and he says, do you want to read my letter to Santa? She says, all that? I hope I don't forget to ask for something I want, he says. This is alphabetized. Yeah, and I cross-index the accessory items he'll need to get. I try and help him out. This says volume one. Yeah, atom bomb through grenade launcher. You're going to be one sad little kid on Christmas morning. And that set me thinking, as it does with the bizarre thinking of preachers, about God's gift to us. Someone wrote, if our greatest need had been information, God would have sent us an educator. If our greatest need had been technology, God would have sent us a scientist. If our greatest need had been money, God would have sent us an economist. If our greatest need had been pleasure, God would have sent us an entertainer. But our greatest need was forgiveness. So God sent us a savior. The baby Jesus was not destined for political power, even though some of his disciples might actually have wanted that. I don't know whether Mary and Joseph, when they looked at him there in the manger, thought, I wonder what he'll grow up to be. Perhaps he'll grow up to be a doctor or a teacher, what a lot of parents would have liked and still would. And he did grow up to heal people, and he did grow up to teach people, but not in the way they imagined. And his brothers and sisters who came on later probably thought he was going to be a carpenter. That's what he trained for. That's what his father had been. And sure enough, he did end his life with nails in his hand, but not in the way that they envisaged at all. No, God knew what we needed, and it wasn't necessarily what we wanted or what we expected. He gave us a weak, vulnerable baby in an animal feeding trough. Not a powerful, rich leader living in a palace. He gave the message about his birth to shepherds and to foreigners, outsiders, on the fringes of society. Not the people in power or the people even who were the churchgoers of his day. Because God's love breaks all the boundaries and doesn't allow us any comfort zones. And he gave the freedom, this is what's so remarkable, to reject his gift. And Herod did. He gave the freedom to ignore his gift. And lots of people in Israel did, as they still do in Kingston and elsewhere today. But John, Jesus' follower, said in his gospel, to those who received him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become the children of God. He gave light and life. He gave grace and truth. And he still does offer that to us today, whatever else we've got on our present list.